Has a boy's voice ever done that to you? Oh, wait, sorry. Has a girl's voice ever done that to you? He didn't sit by me or anything on the way there, but on the way back from school, he was the last one getting on. There weren't any empty seats, but I could tell by the way he scanned all the people on the bus that he wasn't looking for an empty seat. He was looking for me. When his eyes met mine, I looked down at my lap real quick. I hate that I'm not very confident around guys. Maybe that's something I'll grow into when I finally turn 16. He sat down next to me and dropped his backpack between his legs. That's when I noticed what Katie was talking about. He did kind of smell, but I didn't judge him for that. He didn't say anything at first, but he was fidgeting with a hole in his jeans. It wasn't the kind of hole that was there to make jeans look stylish. I could tell it was there because it was a genuine hole, due to his pants being old. They actually looked a little too small for him because his ankles were showing. But he was skinny enough that they fit him just fine everywhere else. "Did you tell anyone?" he asked me. I looked at him when he spoke, and he was looking right back at me like he was worried. It was the first time I had actually gotten a good look at him. His hair was dark brown, but I thought maybe if he washed it, it wouldn't be as dark as it looked right then. His eyes were bright, unlike the rest of him. Real blue eyes, like the kind you see on a Siberian husky. I shouldn't compare his eyes to a dog, but that's the first thing I thought when I saw them. I shook my head and looked back out the window. I thought he might get up and find another seat at that point, since I said I didn't tell anyone, but he didn't. The bus made a few stops, and the fact that he was still sitting by me gave me a little courage, so I made my voice a whisper. "Why don't you live at home with your parents?" He stared at me for a few seconds, like he was trying to decide if he wanted to trust me or not. Then he said, "Because they don't want me to." That's when he got up. I thought I'd made him mad, but then I realized he got up because we were at our stop. I grabbed my stuff and followed him off the bus. He didn't try to hide where he was heading today like he usually does. Normally, he walks down the street and goes around the block so I don't see him cut through my backyard. But today, he started to walk toward my yard with me. When we got to where I would normally turn to go inside and he would keep walking, we both stopped. He kicked at the dirt with his foot and looked behind me at my house. "What time do your parents get home?" "Around 5, I said. It was 3:45. He nodded and looked like he was about to say something else, but he didn't. He just nodded again and started walking toward that house with no food or electricity or water. "Now, Ellen, I know what I did next was stupid, so you don't have to tell me." I called out his name, and when he stopped and turned around, I said, "If you hurry, you can take a shower before they get home." My heart was beating so fast because I knew how much trouble I could get into if my parents came home and found a homeless guy in our shower. I'd probably very well die. But I couldn't just watch him walk back to his house without offering him something. He looked down at the ground again, and I felt his embarrassment in my own stomach. He didn't even nod. He just followed me inside my house and never said a word. The whole time he was in the shower, I was panicking. I kept looking out the window and checking for either of my parents' cars, even though I knew it would be a good hour before they got home. I was nervous one of the neighbors might have seen him come inside, but they didn't really know me well enough to think having a visitor would be abnormal. I had given Atlas a change of clothes and knew he not only needed to be out of the house when my parents got home, but he needed to be far away from our house. I'm sure my father would recognize his own clothes on some random teenager in the neighborhood. In between looking out the window and checking the clock, I was filling up one of my old backpacks with stuff. Food that didn't need refrigerating, a couple of my father's t-shirts, a pair of jeans that were probably going to be two sizes too big for him, and a change of socks. I was zipping up the backpack when he emerged from the hallway. I was right. Even wet, I could tell his hair was lighter than it looked earlier. It made his eyes look even bluer. He must have shaved while he was in there because he looked younger than he did before he got in the shower. I swallowed and looked back down at the backpack because I was shocked at how different he looked. I was scared he might see my thoughts written across my face. I looked out the window one more time and handed him the backpack. You might want to go out the back door so no one sees you. He took the backpack from me and stared at my face for a minute.
What's your name?
He said as he slung the pack over his shoulder. Lily. He smiled. It was the first time he'd smiled at me, and I had an awful, shallow thought in that moment. I wondered how someone with such a great smile could have such shitty parents. I immediately hated myself for thinking it, because of course parents should love their kids no matter how cute or ugly or skinny or fat or smart or stupid they are. But sometimes you can't control where your mind goes. You just have to train it not to go there anymore. He held out his hand and said, I'm Atlas. I know, I said, without shaking his hand. I don't know why I didn't shake his hand. It wasn't because I was scared to touch him. I mean, I was scared to touch him, but not because I thought I was better than him. He just made me so nervous. He put his hand down and nodded once, then said, I guess I better go. I stepped aside so he could walk around me. He pointed past the kitchen, silently asking if that was the way to the back door. I nodded and walked behind him as he made his way down the hall. When he reached the back door, I saw him pause for a second when he saw my bedroom. I was suddenly embarrassed that he was seeing my bedroom. No one ever sees my bedroom, so I've never felt the need to give it a more mature look. I still have the same pink bedspread and curtains I've had since I was 12. For the first time ever, I felt like ripping down my poster of Adam Brody. Atlas didn't seem to care how my room was decorated. He looked straight at my window, the one that looks out over the backyard, then he glanced back at me. Right before he walked out the back door, he said, Thank you for not being disparaging, Lily. And then he was gone. Of course I've heard the term disparaging before, but it was weird hearing a teenage guy use it. What's even weirder is how everything about Atlas seems so contradictory. How does a guy who is obviously humble, well-mannered, and uses words like disparaging end up homeless? How does any teenager end up homeless? I need to find out, Ellen. I'm gonna find out what happened to him. You just wait and see. Lily. I'm about to open another entry when my phone rings. I crawl across the couch for it, and I'm not the least bit surprised to see it's my mother again. Now that my father has passed and she's alone, she'll probably call me twice as much as she did before. Hello? What do you think about my moving to Boston? She blurts out. I grab the throw pillow next to me and shove my face into it, muffling a scream. Wow, I say. Really? She's quiet, and then... It was just a thought. We can discuss it tomorrow. I'm almost to my meeting. Okay, bye. And just like that, I want to move out of Massachusetts. She can't move here. She doesn't know anyone here. She'd expect me to entertain her every day. I love my mother, don't get me wrong, but I moved to Boston to be on my own, and having her in the same city would make me feel less independent. My father was diagnosed with cancer 3 years ago while I was still in college. If Ryle Kincaid were here right now, I'd tell him the naked truth that I was a little bit relieved when my father became too ill to physically hurt my mother. It completely changed the dynamic of the relationship, and I no longer felt obligated to stay in Plethora to make sure she was okay. Now that my father is gone, and I never have to worry about my mother again, I was looking forward to spreading my wings, so to speak. But now she's moving to Boston. It feels like my wings were just clipped. Where is a marine-grade polymer chair when I need one? I'm seriously stressing out, and I have no idea what I do if my mother moves to Boston. I don't have a garden, or a yard, or a patio, or weeds. I have to find another outlet. I decide to clean. I place all my old shoeboxes full of journals and notes in my bedroom closet. Then I organize my entire closet, my jewelry, my shoes, my clothes. She cannot move to Boston. Chapter 3 6 months later. Oh. That's all she says. My mother turns and assesses the building, running a finger over the windowsill next to her. She picks up a layer of dust and wipes it between her fingers. It needs a lot of work, I know, I interrupt. I point at the windows behind her. But look at the storefront. It has potential. She scrolls over the windows, nodding. There's this sound she makes in the back of her throat sometimes, where she agrees with a little hum, but her lips remain tight. It means she doesn't actually agree. And she makes that sound. Twice. I drop my arms in defeat. You think this was stupid? She gives her head a slight shake. That all depends on how it turns out, Lily, she says. The building used to house a restaurant, and it's still full of old tables and chairs. My mother walks over to a nearby table and pulls out one of the chairs, taking a seat. If things work out, and your floral shop is successful, then people will say it was a brave, bold, smart business decision. But if it fails, and you lose your entire inheritance, then people will say it was a stupid business decision. She shrugs. That's just how it works. You majored in business, you know that. She glances around the room slowly, as if she's seeing it the way it will look a month from now. Just make sure it's brave and bold, Lily. I smile. I can accept that. I can't believe I bought it without asking you first, I say, taking a seat at the table. You're an adult, it's your right, she says, but I can hear a trace of disappointment. I think she feels even lonelier now that I need her less and less. It's been 6 months since my father died, and even though he wasn't good company, it has to be weird for her, being alone. She got a job at one of the elementary schools, so she did end up moving here. She chose a small suburb on the outskirts of Boston. She bought a cute two-bedroom house on a cul-de-sac with a huge backyard. I dream of planting a garden there, but that would require daily care. My limit is once-a-week visits, sometimes twice. What are you going to do with all this junk? She asks. She's right. There's so much junk. It'll take forever to clear this place out. I have no idea. I guess I'll be busting my ass for a while before I can even think about decorating. When's your last day at the marketing firm? I smile. Yesterday. She releases a sigh and then shakes her head. Oh, Lily, I certainly hope this works out in your favor. We both begin to stand when the front door opens. There are shelves in the way of the door, so I careen my head around them and see a woman walk in. Her eyes briefly scan the room until she sees me. Hi, she says with a wave. She's cute. She's dressed well, but she's wearing white capris, a disaster waiting to happen in this dust bowl. Can I help you? She tucks her purse beneath her arm and walks toward me, holding out her hand. I'm Elisa, she says. I shake her hand. Lily. She tosses a thumb over her shoulder. There's a help wanted sign out front. I look over her shoulder and raise an eyebrow. There is? I didn't put up a help wanted sign. She nods and then shrugs. It looks old, though, she says. It's probably been there a while. I was just out for a walk and saw the sign. Was curious, is all. I like her almost immediately. Her voice is pleasant and her smile seems genuine. My mother's hand falls down on my shoulder and she leans in and kisses me on the cheek. I have to go, she says. Open house tonight. I tell her goodbye and watch her walk outside, then turn my attention back to Elisa. I'm not really hiring yet, I say. I wave my hand around the room. I'm opening up a floral shop, but it'll be a couple of months at least. I should know better than to hold preconceived judgments, but she doesn't look like she'd be satisfied with a minimum wage job. Her purse probably cost more than this building. Her eyes light up. Really? I love flowers. She spins around in a circle and says, This place has a ton of potential. What color are you painting it? I cross my arm over my chest and grab my elbow. Rocking back on my heels, I say, I'm not sure. I just got the keys to the building an hour ago, so I haven't really come up with a design plan yet. Lily, right? I nod. I'm not going to pretend I have a degree in design, but it's my absolute favorite thing. If you need any help, I do it for free. I tilt my head. You'd work for free? She nods. I don't really need a job. I just saw the sign and thought, what the heck? But I do get bored sometimes. I'd be happy to help you with whatever you need, cleaning, decorating, picking out paint colors. I'm a Pinterest whore. Something behind me catches her eye, and she points. I could take that broken door and make it magnificent. All this stuff, really. There's a use for almost everything, you know. I look around at the room, knowing full well I'm not going to be able to tackle this by myself. I probably can't even lift half this stuff alone. I'll eventually have to hire someone anyway. I'm not going to let you work for free, but I could do $10 an hour if you're really serious. She starts clapping, and if she weren't in heels, she might have jumped up and down. When can I start? I glance down at her white capris. Will tomorrow work? You'll probably want to show up in disposable clothes. She waves me off and drops her Hermes bag on a dusty table next to her. Nonsense, she says. My husband is watching the Bruins play at a bar down the street. If it's okay, I'll just hang with you and get started right now. 2 hours later, I'm convinced I've met my new best friend. And she really is a Pinterest whore. We write keep and toss on sticky notes and slap them on everything in the room. She's a fellow believer in upcycling, so we come up with ideas for at least 75% of the stuff left in the building. The rest, she says, her husband can throw out when he has free time. Once we know what we're going to do with all the stuff, I grab a notebook and a pen and we sit at one of the tables to write down design ideas. Okay, she says, leaning back in her chair. I want to laugh because her white capris are covered in dirt now, but she doesn't seem to care. Do you have a goal for this place? She asks, glancing around. I have one, I say. Succeed. She laughs. I have no doubt you'll succeed, but you do need a vision. I think about what my mother said. Just make sure it's brave and bold, Lily. I smile and sit up straighter in my chair. Brave and bold, I say. I want this place to be different. I want to take risks. She narrows her eyes as she chews on the tip of the pen. But you're just selling flowers, she says. How can you be brave and bold with flowers? I look around the room and try to envision what I'm thinking. I'm not even sure what I'm thinking. I'm just getting itchy and restless, like I'm on the verge of a brilliant idea. What are some words that come to mind when you think of flowers? I ask her. She shrugs. I don't know. They're sweet, I guess. They're alive, so they make me think of life, and maybe the color pink and spring. Sweet, life, pink, spring, I repeat. And then, Elisa, you're brilliant. I stand up and begin pacing the floor. We'll take everything everyone loves about flowers, and we'll do the complete opposite. She makes a face to let me know she isn't following. Okay, I say. What if, instead of showcasing the sweet side of flowers, we showcased the villainous side? Instead of pink accents, we use darker colors, like a deep purple, or even black. And instead of just spring and life, we also celebrate winter and death. Elisa's eyes are wide. But what if someone wants pink flowers, though? Well, we'll still give them what they want, of course, but we'll also give them what they don't know they want. She scratches her cheek. So, you're thinking black flowers? She looks concerned, and I don't blame her. She's only seeing the darkest side of my vision. I take a seat at the table again and try to get her on board. Someone once told me that there is no such thing as bad people. We're all just people who sometimes do bad things. That stuck with me because it's so true. We've all got a little bit of good and evil in us. I want to make that our theme. Instead of painting the walls a putrid sweet color, we paint them dark purple with black accents. And instead of only putting out the usual pastel displays of flowers and boring crystal vases that make people think of life, we go edgy, brave and bold. We put out displays of darker flowers wrapped in things like leather or silver chains. And rather than put them in crystal vases, we'll stick them in black onyx or, I don't know, purple velvet vases lined with silver studs. The ideas are endless. I stand up again. There are floral shops on every corner for people who love flowers. But what floral shop caters to all the people who hate flowers? Elisa shakes her head. None of them, she whispers. Exactly. None of them. We stare at each other for a moment, and then I can't take it another second. I'm bursting with excitement, and I just start laughing like a giddy child. Elisa starts laughing, too, and she jumps up and hugs me. Lily, it's so twisted. It's brilliant. I know. I'm full of renewed energy. I need a desk so I can sit down and make a business plan, but my future office is full of old vegetable crates. She walks toward the back of the store. Well, let's get them out of there and go buy you a desk. We squeeze into the office and begin moving crates out one by one and into a back room. I stand on the chair to make the piles taller so we'll have more room to move around. These are perfect for the window displays I have in mind. She hands me two more crates and walks away. And as I'm reaching on my tiptoes to stack them at the very top, the pile begins to tumble. I try to find something to grab hold of for balance, but the crates knock me off the chair. When I land on the floor, I can feel my foot bend in the wrong direction. It's followed by a rush of pain straight up my leg and down to my toes. Elisa comes rushing back into the room and has to move two of the crates from on top of me. Lily, she says. Oh my God, are you okay? I pull myself up to a sitting position, but don't even try to put weight on my ankle. I shake my head. My ankle. She immediately removes my shoe and then pulls her phone out of her pocket. She begins dialing a number and then looks up at me. I know this is a stupid question, but do you happen to have a refrigerator here with ice in it? I shake my head. I figured, she says. She puts the phone on speaker and sets it on the floor as she begins to roll up my pant leg. I wince, but not so much from the pain. I just can't believe I did something so stupid. If I broke it, I'm screwed. I just spent my entire inheritance on a building that I won't even be able to renovate for months.
Hey, Issa, a voice croons through her phone. Where are you at? The game's over.
Elisa picks up her phone and brings it closer to her mouth. At work. Listen, I need... The guy cuts her off and says,
At work? Babe, you don't even have a job.
Elisa shakes her head and says, Marshall, listen, it's an emergency. I think my boss broke her ankle. I need you to bring some ice to... He cuts her off with a laugh.
Your boss? Babe, you don't even have a job.
He repeats.
Elisa rolls her eyes. Marshall, are you drunk? It's onesie day.
He slurs into the phone.
You knew that when you dropped us off, Issa. Free beer until...
She groans. Put my brother on the phone.
Fine, fine. Marshall mumbles.
There's a rustling sound that comes from the phone and then...
Yeah?
Elisa spits out our location into the phone. Get here right now, please, and bring a bag of ice.
Yes, ma'am,
he says. The brother sounds like he may be a little drunk, too. There's laughter, and then one of the guys says,
She's in a bad mood.
And then the line goes dead. Elisa puts her phone back in her pocket. I'll go wait outside for them. They're just down the street. Will you be okay here? I nod and reach for the chair. Maybe I should just try to walk on it.
Elisa pushes my shoulders back until I'm leaning against the wall again.
No, don't move. Wait until they get here, okay?
I have no idea what two drunken guys are going to be able to do for me, but I nod. My new employee feels more like my boss right now, and I'm kind of scared of her at the moment.
I wait in the back for about 10 minutes when I finally hear the front door to the building open.
What in the world?
A man's voice says.
Why are you all alone in this creepy building?
I hear Elisa say, She's back here. She walks in, followed by a guy wearing a onesie. He's tall, a little bit on the thin side, but boyishly handsome with big, honest eyes and a head full of dark, messy, way past due for a haircut hair. He's holding a bag of ice.
Did I mention he was wearing a onesie? I'm talking a legit, full-grown man in a SpongeBob onesie.
This is your husband? I ask her, cocking an eyebrow. Elisa rolls her eyes.
Unfortunately, she says, glancing back at him. Another guy, also in a onesie, walks in behind them, but my attention is on Elisa as she explains why they're wearing pajamas on a random Wednesday afternoon.
There's a bar down the street that gives out free beer to anyone who shows up in a onesie during a Bruins game. She makes her way over to me and motions for the guys to follow her.
She fell off the chair and hurt her ankle, she says to the other guy. He steps around Marshall, and the first thing I notice are his arms.
Holy shit. I know those arms.
Those are the arms of a neurosurgeon.
Elisa is his sister?
The sister that owns the entire top floor, with a husband who works in pajamas and brings in 7 figures a year?
As soon as my eyes lock with Riles, his whole face morphs into a smile. I haven't seen him in, God, how long ago was that? 6 months? I can't say I haven't thought about him during the past 6 months, because I've thought about him quite a few times, but I never actually thought I'd see him again.
Ryle, this is Lily. Lily, my brother Ryle, she says, motioning toward him.
And that's my husband, Marshall.
Ryle walks over to me and kneels down.
Lily,
he says, regarding me with a smile.
Nice to meet you.
It's obvious he remembers me. I can see it in his knowing smile. But like me, he's pretending this is the first time we've met. I'm not sure I'm in the mood to explain how we already know each other.
Ryle touches my ankle and inspects it.
Can you move it?
I try to move it, but a sharp pain shoots all the way up my leg. I suck in air through my teeth and shake my head.
Not yet. It hurts.
Ryle motions to Marshall.
Find something to put the ice in.
Elisa follows Marshall out of the room. When they're both gone, Ryle looks at me and his mouth turns up into a grin.
I won't charge you for this, but only because I'm slightly inebriated, he says with a wink.
I tilt my head. The first time I met you, you were high. Now you're drunk. I'm beginning to worry you aren't going to make a very qualified neurosurgeon. He laughs.
It would appear that way, he says. But I promise you, I rarely ever get high, and this is my first day off in over a month, so I really needed a beer. Or 5.
Marshall comes back with an old rag wrapped around some ice. He hands it to Ryle, who presses it against my ankle.
I'll need that first aid kit out of your trunk, Ryle says to Elisa.
She nods and grabs Marshall's hand, pulling him out of the room again. Ryle presses his palm against the bottom of my foot.
Push against my hand, he says.
I push down with my ankle. It hurts, but I'm able to move his hand. Is it broken?
He moves my foot from side to side and then says, I don't think so. Let's give it a couple of minutes and I'll see if you can put any weight on it.
I nod and watch as he adjusts himself across from me. He sits cross-legged and pulls my foot onto his lap. He looks around the room and then directs his attention back at me.
So what is this place?
I smile a little too big. Lily blooms. It'll be a floral shop in about 2 months' time.
I swear, his whole face lights up with pride.
No way,
he says.
You did it? You're actually opening up your own business?
I nod. Yep, I figured I might as well try it while I'm still young enough to bounce back from failure. One of his hands is holding the ice against my ankle, but the other one is wrapped around my bare foot. He's brushing his thumb back and forth like it's no big deal that he's touching me, but his hand on my foot is way more noticeable than the pain in my ankle.
I look ridiculous, huh?
He asks, staring down at his solid red onesie. I shrug. At least you went with a non-character choice. It gives it a bit more maturity than the SpongeBob option. He laughs, and then his smile disappears as he leans his head into the door beside him. He stares at me appreciatively.
You're even prettier in the daytime.
Moments like these are why I absolutely hate having red hair and fair skin. The embarrassment doesn't only show up in my cheeks. My whole face, arms, and neck grow flushed. I rest my head against the wall behind me and stare at him just like he's staring at me. You want to hear a naked truth? He nods. I've wanted to go back to your roof on more than one occasion since that night, but I was too scared you'd be there. You make me kind of nervous. His fingers pause their strokes against my foot.
My turn?
I nod. His eyes narrow as his hand moves to the underneath of my foot. He slowly traces his fingers from the tops of my toes down to my heel.
I still very much want to fuck you.
Someone gasps, and it isn't me. Ryle and I both look at the doorway, and Elisa is standing there wide-eyed. Her mouth is open as she points down at Ryle. Did you just... She looks at me and says, I am so sorry about him, Lily. And then she looks back at Ryle with venom in her eyes. Did you just tell my boss you want to fuck her? Oh, dear. Ryle pulls his bottom lip in and chews on it for a second. Marshall walks in behind Elisa and says,
What's going on?
Elisa looks at Marshall and points at Ryle again. He just told Lily he wants to fuck her. Marshall looks from Ryle to me. I don't know whether to laugh or crawl under the table and hide.
You did?
He says, looking back at Ryle. Ryle shrugs.
It appears that way, he says.
Elisa puts her head in her hands. Jesus Christ, she says, looking at me. He's drunk. They're both drunk. Please don't judge me because my brother is an asshole. I smile at her and wave it off. It's fine, Elisa. Lots of people want to fuck me. I glance back at Ryle, and he's still casually stroking my foot. At least your brother speaks his mind. Not a lot of people have the courage to say what they're actually thinking. Ryle winks at me and then carefully moves my ankle off his lap.
Let's see if you can put any weight on it, he says.
He and Marshall help me to my feet. Ryle points to a table a few feet away that's pushed up against a wall.
Let's try to make it to the table so I can wrap it.
His arm is secured around my waist, and he's gripping my arm tightly to make sure I don't fall. Marshall is more or less just standing next to me for support. I put a little weight on my ankle, and it hurts, but it's not excruciating. I'm able to hop all the way to the table with a lot of assistance from Ryle. He helps me pull myself up until I'm seated on top of it, leaning against the wall with my legs stretched out in front of me.
Well, the good news is that it isn't broken.
What's the bad news? I ask him. He opens the first aid kit and says,
You'll need to stay off of it for a few days, maybe even a week or more, depending on how it heals.
I close my eyes and lean my head against the wall behind me. And I have so much to do, I whine. He carefully begins to wrap my ankle. Elisa is standing behind him, watching him wrap it.
I'm thirsty,
Marshall says.
Anybody want something to drink? There's a CVS across the street. I'm good,
Ryle says. I'll take a water, I say. Sprite, Elisa says.
Marshall grabs her hand. You're coming with.
Elisa pulls her hand from his and crosses her arms over her chest.
I'm not going anywhere, she says. My brother can't be trusted.
Elisa, it's fine, I tell her. He was making a joke. She stares at me silently for a moment and then says,
Okay, but you can't fire me if he pulls more stupid shit.
I promise I won't fire you. With that, she grabs Marshall's hand again and leaves the room. Ryle is still wrapping my foot when he says,
My sister works for you?
Yep, hired her a couple of hours ago. He reaches into the first aid kit and pulls out tape.
You do realize she's never had a job in her entire life?
She already warned me, I say. His jaw is tight, and he doesn't look as relaxed as he did earlier. Then it hits me that he might think I hired her as a way to get closer to him. I had no idea she was your sister until you walked in, I swear. He glances at me and then back down at my foot.
I wasn't suggesting you knew.
He begins to tape over the ace bandage. I knew you weren't. I just didn't want you to think I was trying to trap you somehow. We want two different things from life, remember? He nods and carefully sets my foot back on the table.
That is correct, he says. I specialize in one-night stands, and you're on the quest for your holy grail.
I laugh. You have a good memory.
I do, he says.
A languid smile stretches across his mouth.
But you're also hard to forget.
Jesus, he has to stop saying things like that. I press my palms into the table and pull my leg down. Naked truth coming. He leans against the table next to me and says,
All ears.
I hold nothing back. I'm very attracted to you, I say. There's not much about you I don't like, and being as though you and I both want different things, if we're ever around each other again, I'd appreciate it if you could stop saying things that make me dizzy. It's not really fair to me. He nods once and then says,
My turn.
He places his hand on the table next to me and leans in a little.
I'm very attracted to you, too. There's not much about you I don't like. But I kind of hope we're never around each other again because I don't like how much I think about you. Which isn't all that much, but it's more than I'd like. So if you still aren't going to agree to a one-night stand, then I think it's best if we do what we can to avoid each other. Because it won't do either of us any favors.
I don't know how he ended up this close to me, but he's only about a foot away. His proximity makes it hard to pay attention to words that come out of his mouth. His gaze drops briefly to my mouth, but as soon as we hear the front door open, he's halfway across the room. By the time Elisa and Marshall make it to us, Ryle is busy restacking all the crates that fell. Elisa looks down at my ankle. What's the verdict? She asks. I push my bottom lip out. Your doctor brother says I have to stay off of it for a few days. She hands me my water.
Good thing you have me. I can work and do what I can to clean up while you rest.
I take a drink of the water and then wipe my mouth. Elisa, I'm declaring you employee of the month. She grins and then turns to Marshall.
Did you hear that? I'm the best employee she has.
He puts his arm around her and kisses the top of her head.
I'm proud of you, Issa.
I like that he calls her Issa, which I'm assuming is short for Elisa. I think about my own name and if I'll ever find a guy who could shorten it into a sickeningly cute nickname. Illy. Nope, not the same. Do you need help getting home? She asks. I hop down and test my foot. Maybe just to my car. It's my left foot, so I can probably drive just fine. She walks over and puts her arm around me. If you want to leave the keys with me, I'll lock up and come back tomorrow and start cleaning. The three of them walk me to my car, but Ryle allows Elisa to do most of the work. He seems almost scared to touch me now for some reason. When I'm in the driver's seat, Elisa puts my purse and other things in the floorboard and sits in the passenger seat.
She takes my phone out and begins programming her number into it. Ryle leans into the window.
Make sure to keep ice on it as much as you can for the next few days. Baths help, too.
I nod. Thanks for your help.
Elisa leans over and says, Ryle, maybe you should drive her home and take a cab back to the apartment just to be safe.
Ryle looks down at me and then shakes his head.
I don't think that's a good idea, he says. She'll be fine. I've had a few beers, probably shouldn't be driving.
You could at least help her home, Elisa suggests.
Ryle shakes his head and then pats the roof of the car as he turns and walks away. I'm still watching him when Elisa hands me back my phone and says, Seriously? I'm really sorry about him. First he hits on you, then he's a selfish asshole. She climbs out of the car and closes the door, then leans through the window. That's why he'll be single for the rest of his life. She points to my phone. Text me when you get home, and call me if you need anything. I won't count favors as work time.
Thank you, Elisa.
She smiles. No, thank you. I haven't been this excited about my life since that Paolo Nutini concert I went to last year.
She waves goodbye and walks toward where Marshall and Ryle are standing. They begin walking down the street, and I watch them in my rearview mirror. As they turn the corner, I see Ryle glance over his shoulder and look back in my direction. I close my eyes and exhale. The 2 times I've spent with Ryle were on days I'd probably rather forget. My father's funeral and spraining my ankle. But somehow, him being present made them feel like less of the disasters they were. I hate that he's Elisa's brother. I have a feeling this isn't the last time I'll be seeing him.
Chapter 4. It takes me half an hour to make it from my car to my apartment. I called Lucy twice to see if she could help me, but she didn't answer her phone. When I make it inside my apartment, I'm a little irritated to see her lying on the couch with a phone to her ear. I slam our front door behind me, and she glances up.
What happened to you? She asks.
I use the wall for support as I hop toward the hallway.
Sprain my ankle.
When I make it to my bedroom door, she yells,
Sorry I didn't answer the phone. I'm talking to Alex. I was going to call you back.
It's fine. I holler back at her and then slam my bedroom door shut. I go to the bathroom and find some old pain pills I had stuffed into a cabinet. I swallow 2 of them and then fall onto my bed and stare up at the ceiling. I can't believe I'll be stuck in this apartment for an entire week. I grab my phone and text my mother.
Sprained my ankle. I'm fine, but can I send you a list of things to grab for me at the store?
I drop my phone onto my bed, and for the first time since she moved here, I'm thankful my mother lives fairly close to me. It actually hasn't been that bad. I think I like her more now that my father has passed away. I know it's because I held a lot of resentment toward her for never leaving him. Even though a lot of that resentment has faded when it comes to my mother, I still have the same feelings when I think of my father. It can't be good, still holding on to so much bitterness toward my father. But damn it, he was awful. To my mother, to me, to Atlas. Atlas. I've been so busy with my mother's move and secretly searching for a new building between work hours, I haven't had time to finish reading the journals I started reading all those months ago. I hop pathetically to my closet, only tripping once. Luckily, I catch myself on my dresser. Once I have the journal in hand, I hop back to the bed and get comfortable. I have nothing better to do for the next week now that I can't work. I might as well commiserate over my past while I'm forced to commiserate in the present.
Dear Ellen, you hosting the Oscars was the greatest thing to happen to TV last year. I don't think I ever told you that. The vacuuming skit made me piss my pants. Oh, and I recruited a new Ellen follower today in Atlas. Before you start judging me for allowing him inside my house again, let me explain how that came about. After I let him take a shower here yesterday, I didn't see him again last night.
but this morning he sat by me on the bus again. He seemed a little happier than the day before because he slid into the seat and actually smiled at me. I'm not gonna lie, it was a little weird seeing him in my dad's clothes, but the pants fit him a lot better than I thought they were going to. "Guess what?" he said. He leaned forward and unzipped his backpack. "What?" He pulled out a bag and handed it to me. "I found these in the garage. I tried to clean them up for you because they were covered in old dirt, but I can't do much without water." I held the bag and stared at him suspiciously. It's the most I'd ever heard him say at once. I finally looked down at the bag and opened it. It looked like a bunch of old gardening tools. "I saw you digging with that shovel the other day. I wasn't sure if you had any actual gardening tools, and no one was using these, so..." "Thank you," I said. I was kind of in shock. I used to have a trowel, but the plastic broke off the handle and it started giving me blisters. I asked my mother for gardening tools for my birthday last year, and when she bought me a full-size shovel and a hoe, I didn't have the heart to tell her it's not what I needed. Atlas cleared his throat, and then, in a much quieter voice, he said, "I know it's not like a real gift. I didn't buy it or anything, but I wanted to give you something, you know, for..." He didn't finish his sentence, so I nodded and tied the bag back up. "Do you think you can hold them for me until after school? I don't have any room in my backpack." He grabbed the bag from me and then brought his backpack up to his lap and put the bag inside of it. He wrapped his arms around his backpack. "How old are you?" he asked. 15. The look in his eyes made him seem a little bit sad about my age, but I don't know why.
"You're in 10th grade?"
I nodded, but honestly couldn't think of anything to say to him. I haven't really had much interaction with a lot of guys, especially seniors. When I'm nervous, I just kind of clam up.
"I don't know how long I'll be staying at that place," he said, bringing his voice down again. "But if you ever need help with gardening or anything after school, it's not like I have much going on there, being as though I have no electricity."
I laughed, and then wondered if I should have laughed at his self-deprecating comment. We spent the rest of the bus ride talking about you, Ellen. When he made that comment about being bored, I asked him if he ever watched your show. He said he'd like to because he thinks you're funny, but a TV would require electricity. Another comment I wasn't sure if I should have laughed at. I told him he could watch your show with me after school. I always record it on the DVR and watch it while I do my chores. I figured I could just keep the front door deadbolted, and if my parents got home early, I'd just have Atlas run out the back door. I didn't see him again until the ride home today. He didn't sit by me this time because Katie got on the bus before him and sat next to me. I wanted to ask her to move, but then she'd think I had a crush on Atlas. Katie would have a field day with that one, so I just let her stay in my seat. Atlas was at the front of the bus, so he got off before I did. He just kind of awkwardly stood there at the bus stop and waited for me to get off. When I did, he opened his backpack and handed me the bag of tools. He didn't say anything about my invitation to watch TV from earlier this morning, so I just acted like it was a given. "Come on," I told him. He followed me inside and I locked the deadbolt. "If my parents come home early, run out the back door and don't let them see you." He nodded.
"Don't worry, I will," he said with kind of a laugh.
I asked him if he wanted anything to drink, and he said sure. I made us a snack and brought our drinks to the living room. I sat down on the couch, and he sat down in my dad's chair. I turned on your show, and that's about all that happened. We didn't talk much because I fast-forwarded through all the commercials. But I did notice he laughed at all the right times. I think good comedic timing is one of the most important things about a person's personality. Every time he laughed at your jokes, it made me feel better about sneaking him into my house. I don't know why. Maybe because if he's actually someone I could be friends with, it'd make me feel less guilty. He left right after your show was over. I wanted to ask him if he needed to use our shower again, but that would have cut it real close to time for my parents getting home. The last thing I wanted was for him to have to run out of the shower and across my backyard naked. Then again, that'd be kind of hilarious and awesome. Lily. Dear Ellen, come on, woman. Reruns? A full week of reruns? I get that you need time off, but let me make a suggestion. Instead of recording one show a day, you should record two. That way you'll get twice as much done in half the time and we'd never have to sit through reruns. I say we because I'm referring to Atlas and me. He's become my regular Ellen-watching partner. I think he might love you as much as I do, but I'll never tell him I write to you on a daily basis. That might seem a little too fangirl. He's been living in that house for 2 weeks now. He's taken a few more showers at my house, and I give him food every time he visits. I even wash his clothes for him while he's here after school. He keeps apologizing to me like he's a burden, but honestly, I love it. He keeps my mind off things, and I actually look forward to spending time with him after school every day. Dad got home late last night, which means he went to the bar after work. Which means he's probably going to instigate a fight with my mother. Which means he'll probably do something stupid again. I swear, sometimes I get so mad at her for staying with him. I know I'm only 15 and probably don't understand all the reasons she chooses to stay, but I refuse to let her use me as her excuse. I don't care if she's too poor to leave him and we'd have to move into a crappy apartment and eat ramen noodles until I graduate. That would be better than this. I can hear him yelling at her right now. Sometimes when he gets like this, I walk into the living room hoping it'll calm him down. He doesn't like to hit her when I'm in the room. Maybe I should go try that. Lily. Dear Ellen, if I had access to a gun or knife right now, I'd kill him. As soon as I walked into the living room, I saw him push her down. They were standing in the kitchen, and she'd grabbed his arm, trying to calm him down, and he backhanded her and knocked her straight to the floor. I'm pretty sure he was about to kick her, but he saw me walk into the living room, and he stopped. He muttered something under his breath to her, and then walked to their bedroom and slammed the door. I rushed to the kitchen and tried to help her, but she never wants me to see her like this. She waved me away and said, "I'm fine, Lily, I'm fine, we just got into a stupid fight." She was crying, and I could already see the redness on her cheek from where he hit her. When I walked closer to her, wanting to make sure she was okay, she turned her back to me and gripped the counter. I said, "I'm fine, Lily. Go back to your room." I ran back down the hallway, but I didn't go back to my room. I ran straight out the back door and across the backyard. I was so mad at her for being short with me. I didn't even want to be in the same house as either of them, and even though it was dark already, I went over to the house Atlas was staying in and I knocked on the door. I could hear him moving inside like he accidentally knocked something over. "It's me, Lily," I whispered. A few seconds later, the back door opened, and he looked behind me, then to the left and right of me. It wasn't until he looked at my face that he saw I was crying.
"You okay?"
he asked, stepping outside. I used my shirt to wipe away my tears and noticed he came outside instead of inviting me in. I sat down on the porch step, and he sat down next to me. "I'm fine," I said. "I'm just mad. Sometimes I cry when I get mad." He reached over and tucked my hair behind my ear. I liked it when he did that, and I suddenly wasn't nearly as mad anymore. Then he put his arm around me and pulled me to him so that my head was resting on his shoulder. I don't know how he calmed me down without even talking, but he did. Some people just have a calming presence about them, and he's one of those people. Completely opposite of my father. We sat like that for a while, until I saw my bedroom light turn on.
"You should go," he whispered.
We could both see my mom standing in my bedroom looking for me. It wasn't until that moment that I realized what a perfect view he has of my bedroom. As I walked back home, I tried to think about the entire time Atlas has been in that house. I tried to recall if I'd walked around after dark with the light on at night, because all I normally wear in my room at night is a t-shirt. Here's what's crazy about that, Ellen. I was kind of hoping I had. Lily. I close the journal when the pain pills start to kick in. I'll read more tomorrow, Maybe. Reading about the things my dad used to do to my mom kind of puts me in a bad mood. Reading about Atlas kind of puts me in a sad mood. I try to fall asleep and think about Ryle, but the whole situation with him kind of makes me mad and sad. Maybe I'll just think about Elisa and how happy I am that she showed up today. I could use a friend, not to mention help, during these next few months. I have a feeling it's going to be more stressful than I bargained for. Chapter 5. Ryle was correct. It only took a few days for my ankle to feel good enough that I could walk on it again. I waited a full week before attempting to leave my apartment, though. The last thing I need is to re-injure it. Of course, the first place I went was to my floral shop. Elisa was there when I arrived today, and to say I was shocked when I walked through the front doors is an understatement. It looked like a totally different building than the one I bought. There's still a ton of work that needs to be done, but she and Marshall had gotten rid of all the stuff we marked as trash. Everything else had been organized into piles. The windows had been washed, the floors had been mopped. She even had the area where I planned to put an office cleaned out. I helped her for a few hours today, but she wouldn't let me do much that required walking at first, so I mostly drew out plans for the store. We picked out paint colors and set a goal date to open the store that's approximately 54 days from now. After she left, I spent the next few hours doing all the stuff she wouldn't let me do while she was there. It felt good to be back, but Jesus Christ, I'm tired. Which is why I'm debating on whether or not to get up from the couch and answer the knock at my front door. Lucy is at Alex's again tonight, and I just spoke to my mother 5 minutes ago on the phone, so I know it isn't either of them. I walk to the door and check the peephole before opening it. I don't recognize him at first because his head is down, but then he looks up and to the right, and my heart freaks the hell out. What is he doing here? Ryle knocks again, and I try to brush my hair out of my face and smooth it down with my hands, but it's a lost cause. I worked my ass off today, and I look like shit. So unless I have half an hour to take a shower, put on makeup, and throw on clothes before I open the door, he'll pretty much have to deal with me as is. I open the door, and his immediate reaction confuses me.
"Jesus Christ,"
he says, dropping his head against my doorframe. He's panting like he's been working out, and that's when I notice that he doesn't look to be any more rusted or clean than I am. He's got a couple days' worth of stubble on his face, something I've never seen on him before, and his hair isn't styled like it usually is. It's a little erratic, like the look in his eye.
"Do you have any idea how many doors I've knocked on to find you?"
I shake my head because I don't. But now that he mentions it, how in the hell does he know where I live?
29,
he says. Then he holds up his hands and repeats the numbers with his fingers while he whispers,
29.
I let my gaze drop down to his clothes. He's in scrubs, and I absolutely hate that he's in scrubs right now. Holy hell. So much better than the onesie and way better than the Burberry. "Why did you knock on 29 doors?" I ask with a tilt of my head.
"You never told me which apartment was yours,"
he says matter-of-factly.
"You said you lived in this building, but I couldn't remember if you even said which floor. And for the record, I almost started with the third floor. I would have been here an hour ago if I went with my gut instinct."
"Why are you here?" He runs his hands down his face and then points over my shoulder.
"Can I come in?"
I glance over my shoulder and then open the door farther. "I guess, if you tell me what you want." He walks inside and I close the door behind us. He glances around, wearing his stupid hot scrubs, and puts his hands on his hips as he faces me. He looks a little disappointed, but I'm not sure if it's in me or himself.
"There's a really big naked truth coming, okay?"
he says.
"Brace yourself."
I fold my arms over my chest and watch as he inhales a breath, preparing to speak.
"These next couple of months are the most important months in my entire career. I have to be focused. I'm closing in on the end of my residency, and then I'll have to sit for my exams.
He's pacing my living room.